moment you've all been waiting for.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Threads of Time podcast. We had a brief hiatus while I was changing my tampon, getting a little grumpy about the strike situation in the Classic League, but we are back, and I was going to do a group cast today, but I decided that I was going to go solo with my first ever repeat guest to the Threads of Time podcast, Phoenix Rising. He was nice enough to come on, and we have several things to talk about. I made a little list, but PR, welcome to the show.
Hey, man, how you doing? I love being back on, and the whole strike thing. What that kind of came out of the blue for some folks, and like, had you been stewing on it for a while? Like, why did that become so big? What was going on there?
Oh yeah, man. Like, I don't think you were in the league, but I brought it up like four times, and over the past couple of years. And every time I bring it up, it just kind of gets dismissed like, you got nothing to worry about. Don't worry about the strikes. And I'm like, but that's not the point. We got to change it. It's pissing me off. And then it just goes and goes again. And it just hit me at the wrong time this time where, and admittedly, and I think I've tried to be as introspective as I could on what I was posting, I realized that some of the thoughts are irrational. I know I'm not getting kicked out of the league. It's not anything like that. It's that,
right,
like, deep down, ever since I was a little kid, I don't like being judged negatively. And, you know, that has served me well because, you know, that's why I think that I succeed in a lot of things, is because of that just, like, chip on my shoulder fear of being judged negatively. But, you know, I think it hit at a time where, you know, I was particularly sensitive to that, and like I made the mistake of telling people. And normally, like, if something bothers me, I just kind of swallow it down. That's what I do. But then, like, once I posted, then it just was like the river's rushing, man. I'm going to tell all my views on this thing, and it just turned into kind of a bitch fest. And it wasn't productive, and it obviously was not ideal, but at the same time, I don't think any change would have ever happened if I wouldn't have finally just pissed my pants everywhere.
I don't think it's interesting that, like, to me, that you see the strikes as like a negative judgment in some way. I think it's more of, I mean, you, like, I think it's fair to say, are comfortable with negative reinforcement on some level for other folks, like giving them a hard time, just as, hey, we all have pride in the thing that we do, so you should have pride in it too, kind of thing. You've definitely taken part in that in the past, right? Like, you would agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay. So something like this, something like the strikes that happened, I don't think that it's really saying, hey, you're bad at this, you're a negative owner, you're adding like a net negative to the process. I think it's more of, it's kind of a safety net for the people that aren't contributing to the league. It gives the commissioners something to point out and go, hey, but yeah, but really there's these like documented things here. But for folks that are contributing to the league, it becomes more of a, hey, we get it, you're awesome, but we're also going to make you kind of stay at the rest of our level here for a little bit. Nobody's better than anybody else. Does that make sense? Like, it's more of a, it's a way to make sure that everybody understands that there's still these things in place that everybody has to follow by. If you're going to get 40 wins in a season, hey, we're going to give you some shit for it. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're the worst that ever did this, or you're even bad at this. You had a bad year. Like, that's not necessarily judging you negatively. That's just, hey, we remember this. You remember this? That's all. Like, it's not that big a deal. I never really saw it as a hey, you're a drain on the league or anything in that sense.
Hang on, though, because there's a couple things there that I'm going to disagree with you on. First, like number one, I do respond well to negative, things where somebody calls me out for something. I like all that stuff. Sure. I think that's good. I think that's where our boys should be boys and be able to tell, hey, dude, you're fucking up. You got to get this taken care of. I love that. I love that. But here's the three things that are wrong about what's happening. Number one, the strikes are administered unevenly because, or not being administered, but they're being remembered unevenly because I've been in the league for 90 years, and 90 seasons. And so I, my strike's being compared with somebody that has been in the league for 7 seasons or 12 seasons or even 50 seasons. That's not equitable. So for me to always be at the top of the list whenever somebody gets a strike, that does bother me. I don't think that's right. But you said that, you had a bad season. I didn't have a bad season. I had a bad season 6 seasons ago, and the strike just got administered now. But it wasn't even a strike for that year. It was a strike for not hitting 185 for 3 consecutive seasons. So now you're back to, 8 seasons or whatever it was. So it wasn't timely anyway. And whenever you get feedback, it should be timely. This was not good feedback. But then the second strike was for that 4-1 thing. And both of the strikes, that was the other part that got me. So it was a perfect confluence of a bunch of bullshit. Both of those rules had been changed at some point. And admittedly, I don't fucking look at the rules. I don't know when they got changed. But the rule was that front office allocations had to be put in by 4-1. It got changed to 3-31 at some point. So I was actively posting on the boards at 3-31, and nobody said anything until afterwards when I was bitching about the strike for not hitting 185. And I was like, 185 is 180. And I was very sure that I did not get a strike because I had hit 180, but I didn't hit 185. I have no idea when that rule changed. So then it was like a combination of not knowing the rules, thinking the rules bullshit, and then it not being timely, and having the strikes not expire at any point. And I was just like, fuck this shit. I'm sitting here, and this is the other confluence that came together at the same time. I'm like, here I am. I'm fucking getting this title belt made. I'm sending everybody Christmas presents. I'm doing this podcast. And I know it's a non sequitur, but I was like, between these two things, now all of a sudden I'm saying we need to change this rule and have these expiring strikes. And everybody's giving me shit. And I'm like, motherfucker, I'm feeling very unappreciated right now. And that's where it all came together. And I turned into a fireball of nonsense.
No, but hold on. See, now, so that's part of it, though, right? Now, you say that that you're remembered with unevenly compared to other strikes, right? Your name comes up. You're being compared against, without being too malicious here. You're being compared against newer owners that are receiving strikes, and you're like, hey, I'm not CK. That's not the way this goes. But the problem with that is the reason why you're being remembered more strongly is because you're at the forefront of people's minds, period. So it's not just in a negative aspect with the strikes, things like that. I honestly believe this, and this isn't, blowing smoke up your ass. When people think of TCL, for a very long time now, you're the name that comes up. You're kind of the driving force behind the league. I think you're the one owner that the league can afford to lose the least. So I don't think I think that you're seeing the negative aspect of it more prominently because it's the part that seems most unlike the others to you. But from the outside, for me specifically, the negative aspect is so small. Like, it's not negative at all. It's just when the conversation comes up, it's like, oh, hey, even Zubat's fucked up. Like, it's not even, it's one of those things that since you're so prevalent and pervasive in the league, that's why your name comes up more. It's not that we're remembering the bad things more, right? Because it's not a hypocrisy thing. Everybody knows that you own the fact that, sometimes, like the whole tank and bank strategy, right? You're like, yeah, I'm not good right now. I want to get my pieces. I want to get my kids, and I want to build up. That's fine. You own it. But then somebody like Jelly, who was terrible for his first few seasons in the league, and then turn that into an asset manipulation, like rollover thing for the next 40, 50 seasons, whatever it was, that he was amazing and is now down again. People find more hypocrisy in that, where they're like, okay, you're going to give somebody shit for this thing that they're doing when you started your base the same way. Now, I don't think it relates to you in the same way. I think it's more of a, you're more at the top of people's mind in a positive way. So when things come up, you're pointed to as an example of, hey, even that guy messed up once. Like, it's a, everybody does it. It's not a big deal. But I think for you, it's like, hey, look at all this shit I'm doing. I'm putting, like, this is legitimately a serious part of my life. I'm dedicating real time to this. And now they're going to give me shit over something that happened 4 years ago that was wrong the first fucking time. Like, I get it. I totally get it. I just think that there's a different perspective to see it as well. Like, you're so beloved in the league, and you're so at the top of people's list that when these things come up, it's easy to grab your name because you're just at the forefront. It's not that you're at the forefront for any negative reasons. It's just you are TCL at this point.
Well, and let me say before, you know, because I can hear the thoughts of the Threads of Time listeners right now. They're saying, but Zubaz, you did earn some of those strikes, and I agree. I do want to just get that out of there. There was a time where I legitimately tank and banked, where I did not hit 57 wins and all that shit. And some of those strikes are deserved, and I deserve to get some shit on them when they happened and whatever. But I think where this one stung a little bit is because I was sure that I did it perfect, where I didn't hit below 57 wins. I did hit the 120, 180. And so, like, when... And then it, seasons later, it came up, and I was like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? This entire time, I thought I had done it within the rules. And even if you listen back to some of the podcasts or the podcast with Jelly, I talked about how I had done the cycling and not tanking. And I'm calling it cycling because I hit all the win minimums. I had said that in multiple podcasts, and no one called me out for it. And then all these seasons later, well, it's like, you got a strike.
I mean, that's nomenclature. Like, you're using semantics here, right? Like, you're using the term tanking as a way to define it by outside of the rules. You're losing outside of the rules in a way that needs to be punished.
Right.
Where I think a lot of people use the term tanking as going to be intentionally less competitive than I need to be so I can be better later.
Right.
Which, like, if you do that within the rules, that's still tanking in some folks' minds. And honestly, like, it's just a term. It's semantics. It means different things to different people. So, like, focusing on a label of tank and bank when to me it means a thing, and to you it means a thing, and to a third person it probably means a third thing, like, that's a weird hole to fall down, and you can go crazy that way very quickly.
Agree.
Like, it's so interesting to me, like, this last 2 weeks or so, because on one end, you strike me as somebody that has ultimate confidence in that you're willing to try things that are completely outside of your comfort zone, willing to dedicate a level of investment to things that a lot of people don't really establish in the league. But then also, something like this can untie the thread so easily. You know what I mean? Like, it's very interesting to me. And I think that it does show, like, exactly how passionate you are about this. Because I know you said in the past, in your work life, you're very measured. Like, you don't do pretty much any of the things, like, any of the behaviors that you establish on the boards are pretty much gone by the wayside in your professional life. Is that right?
That was right. That is not right anymore. That was one of the big reasons I moved to Austin, because the one thing that I realized about myself is, like, no matter how successful I was in my hotel career, I wasn't truly happy because I wasn't truly free. So now that I'm down here, I say the word bitch at work multiple times a day when I'm talking about these bitches. And so it's so nice to work in an environment where I can just be me. It was a big part of, you know, this journey that I've been on this last couple years. Last 2 years.
So was that part of the interview process? You come in, you have your phone interviews, you fly in, you do whatever, and you're like, hold on, buddy. It's really important for me to just be able to let go of a bitch or a cocksucker every now and again. Is that okay? Is that okay with you? And then they're like, yeah, man, do it. And that was what sold you.
Well, not really. Like, because I knew who Aubrey Marcus was before I came to work here. So I knew what I was getting into coming in.
Yeah, I remember, didn't you post a thread like years ago following, like talking about Aubrey? I'm pretty sure.
Well, I think I was talking about it in relation to when I was looking into ayahuasca. I talked about him and I talked about Joe Rogan.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
that's right.
So, yeah. So this is kind of a manifest destiny thing at this point. But, yeah, I mean, it's a great environment to be part of. So it goes. But back to what originally you were saying is why I was being measured. And I think for the most part, I still am. This was, as Mac said to me via text, this was a very out of character thing. And that's why a lot of people thought that it was part of like a set up for a prank or a April Fool's Day joke.
I legitimately thought it was a T-Killer thing. I was like, he's not taking this that seriously. And then there was no punchline. Like, it became more and more, oh, wait, is this? I don't know if, like, it honestly seemed like an Andy Kaufman thing, where you were just dedicated to the bit. Like, I honestly didn't take it seriously until you did the off-ramp thing.
Right.
I was like, oh. This was a legit thing the entire time. Yes, they're good points. Like I don't want to say I didn't take it seriously because that diminishes the effort. I want to say that I thought that you were bringing up good points, but doing it in a hey fuck this shit way, but like not without anger, but with more of a do you see how dumb we are? Look at how dumb we are. I'm going to point out how dumb all of this is. Like I thought that it was always lighthearted and not personally motivated in any way until the end, and I was like, oh no, he was being legit sincere here, and I missed that. And I think that might have been the reaction by, you know, a couple of owners.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where you ever see a situation on the news or somewhere else where you're like, how could that possibly happen? And then if you look at the ingredients that just happened to come together, it was a really random set of things that all just happened at once. And I think it was a one-off. It's not a big deal anymore, but it just was the perfect mix of bullshit all at once for me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So you just mentioned Andy Kaufman. Are you still doing stand-up?
So, yes, actually. I've been doing more writing than performing because I found that... to me, stories are funnier than jokes. I don't really know jokes. I don't tell jokes. And the jokes I would tell would be incredibly blue and off-putting to 95% of the people. So I do like more sketch and short writing, and I've had some success with that, selling some things there.
How does that process work? How do you sell things? Do you write it and then throw it out on a site or something? I don't even know how you do it.
So there's a couple of different avenues to like to have your stuff seen and produced. What I initially moved down here, I don't know if I'm repeating anything, so I'll try to make it brief. When I initially moved down here, I had a mutual friend that was working with Funny or Die, and he said, hey, show me some samples of your writing and give me a premise on a thing and let me see if we can work with it. Because he was really just doing like a coach mentoring thing because he writes for Funny or Die, he writes for Nat Geo. And he was really just kind of being helpful for me. And then I pitched him a sketch on... you're familiar with like dating sites, things like this where there's like video confessionals or introductions where people say, hi, my name is X and I'm into long walks on the beach and walking dogs and sniffing brandy next to the fire, things like this, right? Like you've seen those like stupid, really cliche videos.
Yeah, like I know of eHarmony, that type of thing, but not like videos. I don't know. But I get the premise. All right.
So my idea was to do that for like octogenarians, and the things that they were into were terribly graphic sex things. And so
yeah, that's good.
And so like the premise is like there's like three men and three women. They introduce themselves in like a round robin situation, like where the videos just kind of cut together. And so it's like, hi, you know, my name is Agnes, and I recently widowed, and now that Jermaine has passed, I'd really like to try, you know, some big black cock, you know, something small like that, right? It starts off like that, and then you get an introduction to everybody, and then it gets progressively worse. And there's one fella that's like, oh, you know, since my dear Betty went away, I just want to feel like life has meaning again. Like, he's like super sincere and genuine about it and really just wants to find companionship, and all of these older people just want to fuck. And it's and like, that was the idea. And it's, you know, it's a minute and a half short or whatever. So I showed him, I showed it to this mutual friend of ours, and he thought it was funny. He helped me punch it up a little bit, and he got me into a pitch meeting with some folks at Funny or Die. They laughed when I explained the premise, kind of like you did, and they're like, yeah, sure, why not? Generally, what happens at Funny or Die is for like user submissions, things like that, for independent submissions, you self-produce. You film it, you script it, film it, and then give it to them. And then they'll run it as it gets hits, things like that. Ad revenue content gets attached to it. You get folded in on the ad side. So, and that's where you make your money.
So basically, the agreement is you do all the content, and then they have the user base, and that's the agreement, and you make money on that.
Yeah, it's a content farm, basically.
Yeah.
Like you're creating stuff. They have the audience. Then and the ad revenue gets split, however it gets split.
So you got your you produced yours? It's online if we want to go look at it.
Yes, it's so that's the other thing is since I didn't film it and I pitched it to them ahead of time, they bought the pitch and we're going to use it. So you know how you see Funny or Die videos where there's very famous people in them, and it becomes like a part of a viral marketing campaign for something they have upcoming, movie, TV show, whatever.
Yep.
So they bought my pitch and my script, and they were going to use it with Betty White to hype the new season of Hot in Cleveland. It was going to be like she was going to be one of the octogenarians, and so it'd be kind of a funny thing. Oh, look at Betty White doing like terrible sex humor. That's funny. But then Hot in Cleveland got canceled, so they ended up putting it on the shelf. So they still own, so they bought the script for me. They still own the sketch and are going to be reproducing it later. If they don't produce it within the next 6 months, I can produce it on my own and they will host it, and then I'll get the different revenue from that. So I sold the script, and then later I can sell the short if they don't reproduce it with the new cast.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So without obviously getting into your personal specifics, if you sell it or if it gets put on, how much money can you make on something like that?
So for me, it was the first thing I ever sold. I didn't have an agent, didn't have anything. It's literally the first thing that somebody said, hey, that's funny, I want that. So you get you basically get paid industry base for something like this, which is just a little over 500. And then after that, you get percentage of revenue, which is a little more complicated. I don't have the paperwork in front of me, but it's like points on the back end like a movie, right? Like, as the revenue goes, you get a percentage of that. So for me, since this is the first thing I did, I got $500 up front, and then I got $572, something like that, up front. And then the next thing I sell, since I had no writing or producing credits, anything like that, and I had no representation. Now that all of this is like involved, I'm now actually like applying to the Writers Guild. And with being a member of the Writers Guild, base jumps considerably, and it becomes like minimum for something like this is $1,200 to $1,300.
Wow, that's awesome. So to get into the Writers Guild, do you just have to have a writing credit?
You have to have you have to meet requirements. It's the way SAG. It works similarly to SAG, where you have to have X amount of time or X amount of credits, or a combination of the two. For me, for the Writers Guild, you have to have produced content from a recognized member of the guild, and you also have to have produced content using members from SAG or AFTRA. And so I meet like one and a half of the requirements, because technically my thing hasn't been produced because the marketing campaign that it was attached to ended up falling through. So I'm basically right now, I have to apply to be a short-term member of the Writers Guild. So it's like I come in so I can then turn around and write for studios, things like that. And then if I maintain my contract for more than 6 months, then I just become a member of the Writers Guild. It's like the thing is that like it has all of these requirements that generally are completely fulfilled when like somebody writes their first screenplay, like because they've now gone through the industry process, the studio process, things like this, and they meet a bunch of different requirements all in one swoop. Since I'm doing it on a much different scale with like internet comedy and like shorts and things like that, and then using that avenue to get into comedy writing, the requirements are a little bit separate.
So
it's super minutiae, and it's really hard to get the whole picture over the next 15 minutes. So I don't want to bore people.
I have to imagine that once you get into the Writers Guild, though, that might open up some just regular job opportunities that you wouldn't otherwise have access to, right?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. The one thing that I've kind of realized out here, and it doesn't take you very long to figure it out, is they don't. People out here, like the industry, quote-unquote, in nebulous terms, really hates taking chances. They want to make money. So if you prove that you're funny on some level, you have an audience, like that's why they want to buy pre-produced content, because it shows a track record of building its own audience. If that's where, like, the job opportunities will come. So having a writing credit on the Funny or Die thing and getting into the Writers Guild, it shows a history of performance where it's like, hey, this guy's not just a basement screenwriter who's really a coffee barista that's like his script is going to be shit. There's actual like ability there. So then they reach out and start doing more and more things. So like people that do rewrites for movies, they make whole careers on not really getting credited for the story of a movie. That's why you see a written by and story by credits at the end of movies, because those are two different writers.
Mm-hmm.
The story by is almost always the person that originated the idea, and then the written by is the person who actually created the words. So if you end up going into the studio process, generally there's like 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 different writers attached to a project at any given time, and getting the written by or story by credit becomes like massive. It becomes a huge deal, because that's how you that's how the royalties are distributed through the union. If you have the written by story by credit, you're entitled to the royalties when that movie is re-aired. But if you just went in and did like punch up on jokes or rewrote some lines of dialogue, but you're not responsible for like 62% of the words that are written, you don't get anything long term after it. You just get what you were paid for on the spot. Mm. And it entirely decided by an arbitrator who's also a member of the Writers Guild. It's crazy. It's a crazy process.
Everybody gets their money at the end.
So, that's right.
So, speaking of comedy, you, the one thing, I'm a big Joey Diaz fan, and I saw that you had run into him, and he had bought you lunch.
So it was. It's a much better story encapsulated like that than it is in reality. I walked into a Jersey Mike's on, like, two blocks away from my house on Lakersham. It's kind of a major thoroughfare in North Hollywood. And Jersey Mike's is a sandwich place. I walk in, and Joey Diaz is, like, two people in front of me. And I don't have much of an internal filter. You know that thing that tells you, hey, maybe don't blurt that out? That doesn't happen to me. So I was like, it's Joey fucking Diaz. And he looked up. He was like, hey, man, how you doing? And, like, I gave him a little fist bump. And we just started bullshitting about sports. And since I was behind him in line, we were talking for a good 4 or 5 minutes, 6 minutes. And then when we got to the thing, he was like, he goes to say for you, he's like, hey, I got this asshole too. And I was like, what?
Oh, did he okay. say it just like so that, just, too? I got this
He's like, I got this asshole too. Yeah, and it, so, like, I ordered, and he paid, and, like, that was it. He was there with a buddy of his. I had walked in, like, from next door getting dog food and, like, thanked him and, like, went on my way. He was super cool about it. Like, I was just shocked. But I think he's just a really chill guy. We had talked about, oh, at the end, he was like, have you ever seen me live? And I told him a couple of places. He was like, so, basically, you paid for this anyway, is what he said. So,
yeah. That's really cool,
yeah,
man.
Super. Yeah, really nice guy. Really nice guy.
So are you still working in the same place?
Yeah, I still work at Universal Studios. I live, like, 4 blocks away. I walk back and forth to work every day. It's awesome. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, I didn't know if you cared if I said where you worked. But you got a promotion since I last talked to you.
Right? Yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if Anathema or, like, Daniel Patton care about, like, the minutia of my work, but yeah, I'm doing special event stuff at work and doing some coordination stuff there. So yeah, things are going well.
I'm done. Fuck those guys. They're my least valuable listeners. I'm going to go on record right now. Anathema, Daniel Patton, my least valuable. I could lose them and not even worry about it.
No, I don't want to do a deep dive on a thing where, like, well, I barely know this guy and not care if his boss likes him. Like, you know, I'm just trying to be as broad as.
That's where you're wrong, man. People like to get to know the people they're interacting with, and you're living, like, an interesting life. So I think people want to hear about that. You know,
I don't have to deep dive your job,
but I just.
No, I know. Cool. I just feel like. I don't know, man. I feel like everybody has something interesting to say. It's just all different. You know what I mean? Like, what you're doing is crazy interesting. You look at Mac, and Mac was, like, 3 times the size just, what, 2 years ago, right?
And yeah, you remember
what he's doing.
Jeez. Yeah. In that Sooners uniform, he was, like, 320 in that. Now that guy weighs, like, 160 pounds. It's crazy.
So I'm going to the boards the other day, and I see the – you know, the who's online thing. And yeah. Somebody was in the who dares to show their face thread. So I pulled that up and was looking at Mac. And I'm like, that's not the same dude. Like, that's super interesting. Somebody that makes, like, significant changes in their life for the better. Like, that's interesting. Like, what I'm, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just a matter of perspective, I guess.
What are you talking about, man? You just made a big change in your life. You're not drinking anymore.
That's true. I haven't had anything... I haven't had anything to drink since. See, the thing is, I didn't choose a day. It's before Thanksgiving. It's somewhere in late, maybe after Halloween. So
wasn't
somewhere,
it,
it's been,
it
I don't
when
know,
we
two
did,
and a half months, something like that.
Wasn't it when we did Nob Nob?
Yeah. I have had a nightcap since then.
Oh.
So it hasn't been. It hasn't been the entire time. I did not stay the course as well as you have, but I mean, literally from September 2012 through through the time I moved out here, so about a year ago, it was daily. And then when I moved out here, it was probably twice, three times weekly. And now it's not at all.
Yeah, man.
I don't drink at all.
I remember back in the day, like, I was worried about you sometimes. Like, you'd make posts on Facebook, and it'd be a picture of a big bottle of whiskey, and you're like, I'm going to finish this tonight. And it was like, dude, man, I'm a hardcore alcoholic, and I, like, that looks scary to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have life of people, and people react to it in different ways. You know how that goes. Like, I haven't, like you guys know the whole story from back then. So yeah, I just reacted poorly, and at one point was like, well, I can continue doing this because I'm pretty good at whiskey, or I can go and try to pursue things I want to pursue, and that's why I ended up moving down here. So far, things have been going pretty strongly, and I hope for them to be better this year.
So two things: first, congratulations on not drinking. That's awesome. Second, what are you replacing it with? Because I always found, like, I didn't realize how much part of my day I was devoting to drinking beer. And so I had to replace it with things to keep myself from just sitting there and wanting to drink beer. So what are you doing? Obviously, writing's part of it.
Yeah, so right now I try very hard, and 95% of the time I'm successful. I try to write 2 hours every day. I actually enjoy the process of writing. I enjoy thinking of a premise, trying to flesh it out, seeing if it actually works as a premise or if it's something that's just funny to me. I actually live, the house I live in, there's my housemate. He's been great. He's an award-winning, like, musical director out here. He just played the freaking the Kennedy Center. His name is Greg Nabors, Nabours. He's ridiculously talented. So having, like, and I met him through a different friend. So having somebody here that is so accomplished in his field is, it makes me feel like a real asshole if I don't try to, like, get something done in my field. You know what I mean? Like, I feel lazier by comparison. So I've been filling the time a lot with, like, networking and writing and things like that. I also, you know, unlike yourself, succumb to the urges of vagism more often than I should.
Damn it.
But, you know, everybody has to have a vice, I guess. But it's honestly, it's been mostly writing.
You have a roommate now?
I do. I share a three bedroom house with Greg. He has this is going to sound super gay. He has a corgi. I have my little dog. It's like we have a house and a backyard in the middle of Hollywood. It's ridiculous. It's nice.
So you're in Hollywood living with a guy. Are you officially dating, or are you just, is it just a physical thing?
So here's the thing. I don't like to put a label on anything. I don't like to box myself in with terms that are easy for people to understand, because our relationship is very complicated.
Are you in North Hollywood?
I am in North Hollywood.
See, damn it. I know what North Hollywood means. You have to be gay there. They'll kick you out.
Actually, Greg is happily married. His husband. So Greg is gay. His husband is currently doing medical stuff in San Diego. So I see him on the weekends. During the week, he's like, these are really, like, accomplished, active go-getter people, and I just really wasn't for a long time. Like, I did what I needed to do to be alive, and, like, the rest of it, like, I kind of let figure itself out. But they've been, like, seeing how successful people live and comport themselves and having firsthand experience with that has really kind of changed how I operate a great deal.
How so?
So, when you live alone and you're trying to figure out, I don't know anybody who writes. I don't know anybody who's legit, like, crazy famous in the field that I want to do. So I don't know how to get there, right? Like, I don't know the process. So I just kind of do my thing and poke at it and try to figure it out. So, but when things go badly or there's a setback, it's easier when, for me anyway, when I have, when I don't have other stimuli, it's easy for me to fall into the hole of why I failed and without really knowing how to fix it, right? Like, I can't pinpoint it. Here, being able to see, like somebody that's in music played the Kennedy Center, see his failures, like, when he does fail, and when he, like, the way he goes about fixing it and rectifying it, it sets an easier template for me where I go, oh, okay, well, this is that, and you have to understand that some things don't work out that way, and it isn't necessarily because of your process or your talent. It's because whatever it is you were working on, it wasn't the vision of the person you were working on for, and sometimes that's fine. Like, that's okay. There's just not there wasn't a good match there. And that's much easier to accept when you see it happen around you as opposed to when it happens just to you. It kind of goes into a place where it's, well, what am I doing wrong? And you just have to have more confidence in your ability and your talent and your work ethic. And that seems to pay off more often than not.
All right. That's fair. So, I'm just looking at the clock. I know we got a hard stop here. How many more minutes do I have you for?
Let's see. What time? It's 56. I have to walk out of the door at 10 after, so I'd say you got, you know, 4 or 5 more minutes.
All right. Well, then there's a couple things I wanted to make sure I hit. So,
yeah.
In an unsmooth segue, I'm going to ask you about the Ben Scriver for
Alder's
page. I don't know if you saw, but I posted that I made my last post. I don't know if you saw it or not.
I don't believe I did. The last one I saw was the one I gave you shit for.
Yeah.
About, like, me falling on hard times. That's the last one I saw.
That was a funny one. But
did
you go back and look at all the posts? Because I started posting actively as soon as you quit Facebook. Did you know that?
I didn't. So here's the thing. So you know how you were like, this is when you were looking at strikes and saying, this is a bullshit thing. People are remembering this poorly.
Yeah.
For me, in my head, I was like, I was in a shit place. That's how this came up. I don't want to think about being in a shit place. So I didn't look at it at all. Like, it touched a weird chord for me.
So
subjectively, I'm like, no, that's really funny. Or no, objectively, I'm like, that's really funny. But subjectively, I was like, I don't want to be reminded of being a drunk. I'm going to let this one go. So I didn't look. Yeah, I didn't look at all.
So the very next post I made, I said, this is the last post that I'm making. Thanks for being a good sport. Love you or whatever. I don't know what I posted. And so that page is officially closed.
Okay.
So that chapter in our life together, that intertwining, it's over. You've paid for the pizza after these 2 years.
I know, right? $50 later. That's amazing. You know what's funny, though, is I have that sign, and it takes up a very prominent place in the house. And
it should.
I swear to God, there's no joke. I am positive that sign has gotten me laid at least twice.
Really?
Because people want to know the story. People want to know the story behind it. People want to know the thing. And it's an easy story to tell. It's a fun story to tell. And, you know, it also ties in with, like, the emotional vulnerability thing that sucks people in. So it's been a godsend. And I look at it daily. It's literally my favorite thing that I own. I love it. I love it today.
You just gave me the worst piece of news ever. That means inadvertently I've been spreading vagism through my friends.
That's right. That's right.
I was trying to do the opposite. I was trying to make sure you never got laid again.
You know, you're empowering. No, man. People. So the thing is that, like, that story can go so many different ways, right? Yeah. That story can go as, like, yeah, man, as a joke, we ran for city council. Like, I can be very vague on the story. Like, yeah, as a joke, we ran for city council.
No joke.
I was the only
really
Democrat.
Ran for city council. You just didn't win.
Right. I was like, I was the only Democrat in a Democratic populace running against an incumbent that was a Republican, and I did no work and still received like 43% of the vote. Yep. So it's like I can say something like that. Yep. And people find it funny and it's fascinating. Or I can go like a super deep dive on it and tell the backstory of Key and you and things like that. Uh-huh. And then they get all like emotional and like they feel like I've told them a deep story part of myself. And so then they're like, oh, hey, come on, come over here, guy. And they say it exactly like that. And then we get down.
Their panties off.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Okay. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, because I know I got 3 minutes left, and there's something I have to get out because I buried the lead because we were talking about the strikes, and I didn't get to the part where I was going to give you an opportunity to blast somebody. So,
Jesus.
You know what I'm going to talk about is my boy Jelly tried to help me out because he saw the backlash coming from that strikes thing, and he was like, you know what, I'm just going to take this by the horns, and I'm going to...
Yeah.
Because his thought was, this isn't going to pass in a vote, so we can't afford to lose Zubaz, so I'm just going to take it and do it. And that rubbed some people the wrong way, in particular you, and then you guys got into kind of a more personal, like, brawl where he was accusing you of being on drugs and all this shit.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. What the fuck happened there?
So the thing with Jelly is I like him as a dude. During that, I realized very late in the game, but in general, but very early in terms of this thing, that Jelly is more negatively responds to, attacks on integrity and things like that than he does like the rage yelling thing. So I went the snarky route and I was like, okay, listen, like you came in and you changed this other thing. You're making unilateral rule changes here. There was another ruling like 2 or 3 weeks ago that was a thing. It was so the thing I think he handled well was the CK strike for setting lows, and there was another thing that was handled poorly. Pimp surmised it very well on the boards. And so I was like, okay, you're doing a lot of like commissioner discretionary stuff. And I think that that's a bit of an issue because the league has always been fairly transparent when it comes to things like this. There's never really been a track record of, okay, we're just doing this and this is the way it goes. Tell me how you feel about it after the fact. And so, like, yeah, that bothered me a little bit. It bugged me a little bit. And in reality, I was trying to be, like, jokingly snarky, but I'm positive in retrospect it came off as, like, cuttingly snarky. And Jelly kind of went down a hole on it. And I am not one to let people go into a hole alone, so I followed him straight down. And then it got into some backbiting and some aggressive stuff. I just felt like from the jump, if I was going to say something like a negative thing, I feel like I've lost the benefit of the doubt with Jelly on some things because of, you know, like drunken posts in the past, rage posts in the past. And I was like, so I'm not going to be able to have a legit conversation with this guy about his process without him taking it seriously. So I'm not going to take it seriously. I'm going to be jokey about it. And he went off the rails. And the one thing that legitimately killed me, like I laugh about it to this day, is Jelly made a comment about thank you for considering my feelings so closely. And for him to be personally offended and to think that that would somehow be the tipping point is so ridiculously hypocritical because I feel like there's 0% of times that he's been considerate of people's feelings when being who he is. So it's just like the hypocrisy of it kills me. Like, I think it's so funny, but like it wasn't really that big of a deal. I'm not mad. I'm not angry. It's just you experienced in Wisconsin and Modin too. I kind of just have a talking style and a speech style that can be instigatory. And it doesn't really bother me one way or the other. I am who I am, but it rubs people the wrong way sometimes, and I feel like I rub Jelly the wrong way.
But don't you think that the league has not done well without a dictator as a commissioner? When it was Clone, when it was Mac, it was all good. When it was just a mishmash of people, it wasn't really working well. So in a way, I kind of like the fact that he's just fucking taking the command. And if he wants to be Obama with his executive orders, then you guys be the Republican Congress, so be it. But I like having somebody.
Fuck you, Obama. All right.
I like having somebody in charge. Don't you?
This fucking guy. I don't see the thing is I don't care. Like, to me, the league has become so much different than being an aggressively competitive game-based league that I don't really pay much attention to that side of it. I like being good. I like winning. I'm not winning right now. That sucks. I like the competition aspect of it, but that's not why I'm there anymore. Like, I legitimately like the people. I like the talking. I like the forums. And so when somebody comes in and is like, my opinion matters more than history, and I'm just going to change that, and I'm like, no, the history of this is that everybody's opinion matters, so fuck you a little bit. So no, I don't feel that way about a dictatorship, because it's putting one voice ahead of 24 voices, and I have 23 other voices, and I'm telling you, I like those 23 voices more than I like any one voice.
The 23 voices can still be there, but the league worked best when Clone or Mac was running it. A benevolent
dictatorship. Yeah, I said in the thread, I'm fine with the rule change. I don't care about the rule change.
Right.
I just dislike the process.
You dislike the person doing the process.
I don't dislike Chris. I think he's fine. Like, I the
you
thing
just
is
first
is
named
that,
him. That is the PR move right there. You just first named him.
Well, because it's you're he's still a person, right? Like, you're saying you dislike the person behind it.
Yeah.
I don't really know the person behind it. I know the personality, and the personality is like, I get it. I get where he's coming from. I think that there's aspects of him that are amazing. I think there's aspects of him that are not quite as people friendly. That's fine. Like, I don't have any issue with that at all. But I definitely don't dislike the person. Like, I'm not making this personal on any level. The only people I've ever made it personal with are, I'm pretty sure I did it with you because I felt like you were taking it too personally. That's why I did the whole Jason stuff. I told you about that. We talked about this on the last one.
Yep. Reds.
I made it personal with Reds because I felt like he was being aggressively autonomous and not taking anybody's opinion in mind. And I was like, okay, get it. Here's the thing that you have to understand. You have to understand you're a real person and I'm a real person and there are real life consequences. And so the consequences, I'm sending you a pizza. Like, it wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, it's a backwards way of reminding people that there's actually people behind the screen. I don't think Jelly has any problem recognizing that. I think Reds did at one point. So that's where I decide to go personal. And I'm sure I'm sounding like a crazy person right now.
No, I hear what you're saying. So, we could talk for another hour, but we're up against the hard stop. So last 60 seconds, say whatever you want to say.
I will say that I've been around the league and around CSFBL since, I think, 2002, 2003. In the last 12 years, I have been homeless. I have been a drunk. I have had my fiance pass, and the men of the site, and specifically TCL, have been better to me and closer to me and a stronger part of my mental and emotional circle than a lot of real life flesh and blood people that I interact with daily. And I just want to say thank you to you, Ken, Pimp, Mac, Trickett, in his own way, Chris and Jelly and Reds, just, and I'm the Agla brothers, and I know I'm missing many, many more. I can never properly allocute how much affinity I have for all of you, and I hope to be around the league and you guys for much longer in my life, and we all get to share
share our lives going forward and our happiness, things like that. So thank you. That's what I would like to say.
I love it, man. That was really nice. And thank you. I think everybody around is very proud of you and proud of where you're at right now. And we're all excited to see where this thing goes, man, because you got a lot of potential. So, and also,
One last thing.
Yep.
Don't mail the thing to Wolf. He doesn't deserve it.
Oh, I already mailed it. I already sent it.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Wolf doesn't deserve the belt.
He's going to get it on Monday.
Yep. God damn it. All right.
So thank you to PR for being the first ever repeat guest on the Threads of Time podcast. I am your host, Zubaz, and I would also like to elocute my affinity for all of you. And we are out. Remember, Sold Ass tells you to go fuck yourself. We're out.
Attention, everyone. And now, the moment you've all